Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here once a week around our kitchen table to find out what's cooking here in Central Iowa. Yes, we do. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions on this ever so wonderful community radio station. And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Thank them, and thank you, our listener, for joining us around our kitchen table today. This is the first day of spring.
Is it on the 20th this year?
It is. I checked my calendar.
Oh, it is today.
Yeah.
Finally.
Don't we all just feel a little bit better?
Yes.
Oh, we
do. And it's the equinox, right, then?
Right.
So the equal day, equal night. We're also balanced. We are looking forward to a long, delightful summer after a long and sometimes very cold winter.
Hope springs eternal. Here's a little bit of information from my Pagan Book of Days. If I don't read this on the air, who's going to do this? Pagan Book of Days has lists of all sorts of things. And it, for the March 20th, it says, today, it is the vernal equinox, of course. We're celebrating spring.
Yes, we're being very earth-centered today.
Earth-centered. Today is also the sacred day of the Norse goddess Iduna. Iduna, bearer of the magic apples of life, who personifies the light half of the year. As you said, the light's
coming. The light half is, yes, we are firmly in the light half.
And on this day, she appears as a sparrow, bringing joy to all humans.
And isn't it nice? Haven't you been hearing a lot more birds in the woods? I mean, the cardinals are just thrilling away. It's glorious.
Yes, and the birds are making their spring sounds as opposed to their very sad, quiet winter sounds.
Lots of robins bopping around.
Yes, lots of robins. So we'll be celebrating spring, and later Donna will tell us about some latest food trends. You always want to know about these
trendies.
Food
we have
trends.
To be trendy here.
Trends, yes. But first, let's raise a glass to spring. I've been taking this sort of thing to potlucks and things this time of year. The timing always doesn't work out. But I was able this week to get a really nice sap run. This is maple sap. And it
is, as opposed to syrup.
It is not syrup. I am not that desirous of all sorts of work. So all I do is go out and gather sap out of a maple tree.
Do you do it where you put the thing in the tree with the little hook and it goes right into the... I have to say, it looks just like water.
It looks just like
just
water.
Just like water.
But taste it.
Oh, it's delightful.
That's why you can make syrup out of sap.
So the syrup, right, is you just boil it down, right, till it's concentrated
and
brown?
It's really extremely energy intense because you have to use a lot of heat to boil away all the water. Besides sugars that the tree is producing this time of year, there are all kinds of trace minerals that the trees are just going. It's not just maple trees that are doing this.
No.
Picture a whole forest of mighty trees.
Where everything is
moving up during the day toward the sun, moving down if it freezes at night. There's a lot of major pumping going on out there. Not just the maple trees are doing this, but all the trees are waking up.
Birch trees are another one that are tapped quite frequently. And there's something called birch sugar, which is also known as xylitol, which is a sweetener. However, not all xylitol is made out of birch sugar, but some of it is. This is very delicious. It's our spring tonic, as it were.
It is a spring tonic. And actually, I always kind of feel that it helps me get rid of winter and go on toward spring.
Are you consuming a great deal of this, Lana? Is that why you're so perky?
I am perky. Yeah, because I have... all I'm doing is tapping two trees this year. Now, you mentioned...
Okay, so you tap two trees. What kind of volume do you get out of two trees?
On a really good day, you can get from one tap from a tree, I don't know.
2 feet in circumference?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can get a five-gallon bucket full.
Oh, wow.
It is. Really working.
That's quite a lot.
It's working. So I get plenty. Now, I need a whole lot if I was going to cook it down for syrup, which I have done in the past.
Well, I've seen these rigs in Vermont in the woods where you just see all these sort of plastic tubings running all over the forest, you know, and it took me a while. I went, oh, right, this is for their maple syrup. It just sits there all year long, and they must go put the plugs in the trees in the spring, but it's like a giant plastic spider web running at about, I don't know, waist high or more through the whole forest.
That's a good modern way to do it. I mean, the romance of doing it bucket by bucket and getting the horse and sleigh out and all that's
and the
nice.
Kettle, the wooden
When you're dealing with a whole lot of stuff, the plastic tubing is just, as they say, the bee's knees. It is actually that's what my husband and I use. Even when we're tapping it just for the sap, we use a little piece of 3/4 inch plastic tubing. Drill a little hole, 3/4 inch hole with a drill. Go in about,
into the tree.
Yeah, into the sapwood. About 3 inches.
So you actually drill a hole into the tree.
Yeah. And then put that tube in.
2 or 3 inches?
Deep. Yeah. So it's a little hole. And then you put this tube in and then put that tube down into a bucket.
And then when you take the tube out, what happens to the hole in the tree?
It weeps a little bit, but it does grow over surprisingly quickly.
So no harm done to the tree.
No, it's kind of like the trees are nice enough to give us a transfusion.
Huh.
Really.
It is yummy tasting.
It's amazing stuff. It is.
I'm going to have to... take a little home for my grandson, who's a huge maple syrup fan.
Yeah, and this is not syrup. This is sap.
Right,
but this is
the
how it
flavor.
Starts.
It and really, really is. Tastes like maple.
So think of the trees waking up. They are waking up. Now, the timing is right. This happens when it freezes at night and it gets above freezing during the day, which makes this pumping action happen. When the buds start happening, when the trees start getting green.
The little lacy green. My favorite time of year.
But not good for sap because then the trees are using it and the chlorophyll taste goes into the sap. And for us, it's just not tasty at all anymore. Which is
that's fine. Because then the trees need it, right?
Okay. So there you go. So think of the trees waking up this time of year. Oh, isn't it wonderful?
I know. Every time that it's sunny out, it's like I'm ready to get the rake and go out into the garden.
Good for you. It's a little muddy. It's a little muddy.
Oh, yes. I've noticed.
So, there. Raise a glass to spring with a bit of maple sap. Drip, 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 drip. There's more signs of spring on Onion Creek Farm after a long winter. The hens are finally laying up a storm as we come up on Easter.
I heard you had a little incident with wildlife
we
again.
We always have incidents because we have wildlife, and actually we love them a lot. So we've had...
In their proper places.
Yeah, in their proper places. We've had a few visits by a couple of young opossums into our chicken house, and that always causes quite a bit of consternation among the girls. They don't like this big ratty looking thing. Now, opossums, I have never heard of an opossum actually attacking a chicken.
They're coming for the eggs,
they
right?
They love the eggs. Mm-hmm. So you don't want your opossums in the chicken house. And also, the reason I found one there was late at night, I go out to close up the chickens after the sun goes down. Usually they just all go into the chicken house, and that's fine, and they all get on their roost. Here I go out, after dark, and all the hens are, well, not all of them, but half of them were still outside the chicken house.
In the muddy chicken yard.
In the muddy, looking at me and cackling up a storm. Something was wrong. Yes, I go in. Here's this little
guy. They do let you know, don't they?
Oh, this, it's wrong. It's wrong. It's just terrible. It's terrible.
Yep.
So I had to go in and talk very sternly to the little guy. And yes, opossums do play possums. I kind of, you know, hollered at him and poked at him with a shovel and, you know, not to hurt him, poked at him. And they do play possum. He just kind of went over on his side and kind of froze.
Acted dead. I know, aren't they funny?
Well, all right. Now, this was a smaller one, so I could do this with. They do get kind of big and nasty. But this one I just picked up with my shovel, carried him outside, and gave him a toss into the woods. Now, he may be back, but I figure he's got all spring to run around a little bit. Then, of course, it's way past dark, and the chickens are still all upset. I try to explain to him that the
intruder... It's gone. I fixed it.
So... having chickens is always
spring
an adventure.
Adventures. Yeah.
Yes.
But you're getting a lot of eggs now, right?
Oh, lots of eggs. Yeah. Lots of eggs. Good. Also, lots of robins. Huh?
Yes, some nice fat robins.
And I found, and I wasn't making this up because I looked and looked and it stayed around for a while. I saw a bluebird. There was a bluebird sitting on my railing looking
in. The bluebird of happiness has come to Onion Creek Farm.
It was. I think it's a little early for bluebirds, but the one, I've seen a groundhog. And I've seen, I haven't really seen, but I have noticed the presence of skunks. Skunks are moving around. And so be careful
How do you notice the presence? Smell it?
Oh my gosh, couldn't you ever? Especially when they're under your deck. You step out in the evening and they, oh my goodness.
And they squirt under the deck?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if something must have upset them.
Yeah.
They're very shy creatures, but they're back. I think they sleep a lot during the winter, but now spring, everything is out. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Skunks. Oh, dear.
And Lana has 3 pregnant sheep?
Well, not my. They're Megan's sheep. And we want to get Megan on the show.
But they're living at Onion Creek Farm.
There are 3 sheep living at Onion Creek Farm.
Oh, yes. We're going to have some birthing stories this spring.
Yes. Later, stay tuned for some shows in April about sheep. And because these sheep
lambs
are getting fat. And I think that, we do expect some lambs later in the spring. And I am going to ask Megan to come on and talk about that because I don't know nothing about birthing no sheep. So we're going to find out.
Well, you're going to learn.
Oh, I am. Yes, I am. Boy, these are interesting sheep, and they're kind of fun to live with. I don't know too much about taking care of sheep, but I am learning. They work really well with a vegetable farm because we've got electric netting, electric fencing to kind of move around and put them in different places. And it's interesting. And they have learned to train me very well. They see me coming out of the house and they start baying and cawing and banged like I haven't been fed in 300 years and I should come down and pet them. And oh my. So they've got me trained pretty
well.
They've
got your number.
They do. They do. So it's spring. It's spring. Here is a news item from the Donalana Kitchen News Department. Tick-a-tick, tick-a-tick, tick-a-tick. That's a ticker tape. I ran into Beth from Elizabella's Flower Farm, a vendor at our local farmer's market, and I ran into her at a birthday celebration earlier this week. And she said, her folks do a lot of honey. And there was a big...
And they do the beekeeping at the flower farm.
Beekeeping at the flower farm. There was a big to-do in Des Moines at the State House earlier in March. March 14th, Governor Kim Reynolds signed a proclamation that March 14th is National Iowa Honey Bee Day.
Okay, now that's a fairly... nonpartisan, everybody loves it move, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of beekeepers here. Everybody goes down
there.
Who
doesn't love the bees?
Everybody loves bees. Everybody loves honey. And they were kind of celebrating and talking to their legislators and things. And the Alley Cake Bakery here on Main Street in Ames was charged with making a couple hundred little honey cookies that everybody passed out. So it was a lovely, sweet day. And you'd think that that would be all well and good, but this was an awareness sort of thing. We have to be aware of the bees and aware of honey because they are important to Iowa. And Iowa has more than 4,500 beekeepers. There are lots of stuff that needs to be considered, and maybe the state legislature could have a little say about this because things like pesticides, foraging, natural environments.
Seed coatings.
Yes, things that, yes. that affect bees. And
so
the rise
we are, in
pests.
Fact, yeah. reducing our – we're losing bees in the
we're
state,
We're losing
right?
bees, yes. And
along with monarch butterflies and a few mm-hmm. other creatures.
Yeah. Keep in mind, too, that bees – yeah, they're insects. They're out there. They know – they pretty much take care of themselves. But bees are really a domesticated, very small form of livestock. We have an vested interest in them, and they need our help. We ask them to do things.
Right. They've been bred. Pollination is yeah. It's pretty important.
They've been bred to produce lots of honey, and we have to help them over the winter. We have to give them things to eat, and we have to not poison them, please. So, three
so
cheers.
Was the Iowa Bee Day, was it controversial with pesticide users?
Well, these are folks that were talking to our state legislators. So, as I'm sure as they were eating their bee cookies, they could all say, oh, yes, yes, I've got that taken care of. But we shall see. We shall see how
well,
they react.
Well, I know that IDOLS has a registry for places that, for example, organic farms. If you register with IDOLS every year.
IDOLS.
Yeah.
What is IDOLS?
Oh, Iowa Department of Land Stewardship or something? It's part of the Ag Department.
It's a farm thing. Anyway,
right, right.
Yeah, go ahead,
it's
Donna,
the state,
sorry.
You know, USDA kind of thing. Anyway, if you register with them, you get put on a no-spray thing. You have to register with your, you know, your GPS coordinates, which means that supposedly when there's aerial spraying going on, they have to avoid your land because if you get pesticide residue on your organic produce, you are no longer certifiable as organic, which means 3 years of no organic certification. It is a staggering financial loss for an organic farmer. Also, other people on the list are people with apiaries and bee, you know, so you have to register to not be sprayed on. You can put up signs that can be seen from the air. It's a fairly complicated thing. And, of course, with the new what's the pesticide that they're spraying now that is really traveling with the dicamba in it? Anyway, we're getting a lot more overspray than we used to. And it is becoming quite difficult.
I was talking to you about this issue a little earlier, Donna. You mentioned you'd heard something. I think you're making this up, but
no.
You mentioned something about robot bees.
I read this, and I wish I'd bookmarked it or something because some technical company is making robot bees. Can you imagine? Because there is some concern that we are losing enough of our bee pollinators that – and what will we do? I mean, human agriculture cannot survive without pollinators. It's a very, very important aspect, kind of overlooked and underappreciated here. But now that we have our bee day, maybe we'll get a little more love for the bees.
But robot
can you imagine? I can't – I mean, I just read it and I had to laugh. I thought, okay, rather than fix the situation where we're actually – killing off our bee population, figuring out scientifically what it is, and eliminating those elements so that we have our bees. No, the sciences, they've come along with a technological fix. It's impractical, though it sounds.
I think we've been here before. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Robot bee, good luck to them. I mean, something as complicated as a bee. Already, I don't know. How do bees know? How do they
know
how to do this?
It sounds like science fiction to me, but it's actually, I know I did read it, and it wasn't science fiction. It was somebody's actually doing this.
Well, it's probably got stock options already for robot bees.
Oh, my goodness. I don't think I want to invest.
I assume the robot bees are made to pollinate things, right? Not they're not going to be making honey.
Oh, yeah, I suppose not. They don't probably care about the honey part. It's just carrying the pollen around that, you know, like makes the almond trees bloom and then makes the almonds grow and the apple trees, you know, you get those little flowers and without the pollination, you don't get the, I mean, there are self-pollinating plants, but a lot of plants are not self-pollinating.
We need the bees. We need the bees. Yes, we do.
Yes, it's a wild future we're looking at here, folks.
So, thanks to Governor Kim Reynolds for signing the proclamation that makes March 14th Iowa Honeybee Day. Now, I was also told that March 14th also is an important day, too, because that is National Pie Day.
National pies.
314, get it? It's the other pies too, and that's what a nice thing to celebrate. I think National Pie Day is a very good idea, and so is the State Honeybee Day. I found out there is a Honeybee Awareness Day nationally, but that happens late summer, and that's a whole different bunch of folk, but we can celebrate the bees twice. That will be good. Yes, robot bees. Ha! Okay. You're listening to KHOI 89.1, Community Ready for the Heart of Iowa, and this is Tasty Radio. This is the Dynalana Kitchen. Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. The Dynalana Kitchen. We're celebrating the first day of spring here. You know, a lot of folks, well, a lot of the younger folks, kind of take off for this thing called spring break this time of year. And Donna, you took a trip too. Where were you?
Oh, every year I go to Southern California for this trade show. It's called the Natural Products Expo West. And it's 85,000 people come to Anaheim to the convention center and surrounding areas to look at products that you would see. I mean, you'll see them in normal grocery stores, too. Hy-Vee has quite a lot of natural and organic products. And you know, Weeds Field, and now we have Fresh Thyme. So a lot of the products in these stores, even Walmart has them, are sold through this, well, this annual gathering, as it were, where people come, store buyers come to look at what is available in terms of new products, old products, and it's, imagine, oh my goodness, football fields, like maybe 6 or 8 or more. I don't even know how big it is at this point, full of booth after booth of different products.
Are
healthy
these,
products.
These are all things to eat or put on your body? I mean,
all the body products, what are they calling them? Functional foods.
Functional
foods, vitamin supplements, and a lot of foods.
A lot of foods.
General Mills comes because they own Cascadian Farms. Dean Foods, I think, still owns Horizon. You know, Dannon Wave, which is, I think, White Wave, Soy Milk. I mean, you know, there are lots of big companies, and then there's small companies. You know, this year there were, I can't tell you how many bone broths there were.
Oh, that deal.
Yeah. You know, so you got the paleo diet products, the gluten-free diet, and a lot of it is centered, and this has moved into, I mean, we can say it's a trend, but it's a trend in that this segment of the food market is the only part of the food system that is actually growing.
Ah.
So I believe the number was 8% growth for organic this year.
In 1 year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
Some years it's double digits. This is considered slowing down. Whereas conventional agriculture, as they say, flatlined. There's mm-hmm. not a lot of growth there. Mm-hmm. And that's why you notice, for example, supermarkets are now doing more and more prepared foods. And as we mentioned earlier this year, there is a new statistic that for the first time since we've been counting, more food has been sold as prepared foods. That means foods in restaurants, foods in delis, foods in the parts of the grocery store that are the delis. More food is sold prepared than is actually, you know, where you go in and you buy the carrots and the peas and you make your own pasta primavera. So it's a change.
So the fact that human beings need to eat has not changed, but how we are feeding ourselves has changed and is changing.
Well, and I think there's also people at the Natural Products Trade Show. There was a lot of talk, as there has been for the past few years, about there is a growing – shocker, are you ready for this? There is a growing awareness that nutrition comes from what you eat.
Finally.
I know. And there was a very funny – let's see if I can remember this because – some presenter said something like, the prepared foods industry has been feeding us for the last 50 years, and it's done nothing but make us unhealthy and spend our money unwisely. He calls it a failed experiment.
Well, that's a pretty uppity thing to say there.
This is some presenter that was speaking at the trade show. Because they're also, in addition to products, there's a lot of information sharing, a lot of seminars. Whole day was spent, for example, on programming about regenerative agriculture.
Huh?
The reason I go to the trade show is because every year for 21 years, I have been cooking with a couple of friends of mine who are chefs, a benefit luncheon for Organic Farming Research Foundation. So it's kind of like where different people, you know, we make this lunch out of all organic food from scratch. We don't use prepared food. And then have a bunch of our friends for many, many years who are very active in the, you know, like the Organic Valley people come. And it's lovely to see all of your old friends that we at this point all grew up together, as it were. So we make this lunch, and that's what gets me out there. There were about close to 300 people for this luncheon.
300 people for a lunch, okay.
Yeah. So, I spend a few days in the kitchen, and I write the menu much, much in advance. There were a couple of things that I did that I think are worth reporting on for recipes for us here. A big favorite was my tarragon lemonade.
Tarragon, who would have thought?
So it's really simple. You just take a cup of sugar and about a quart of water. You boil that together. I do put in a pinch of, tiny pinch of salt and a tiny pinch of black pepper. And I just boil it up till the sugars dissolve. You're making a simple syrup, not super sweet. And then I take, like, you know how you can buy a packet of fresh herbs in the grocery store? Those little plastic packets. So, you know, it's a small handful, not, you know, a bunch. So after the syrup has boiled and it's all, the sugar's all dissolved, I just put the tarragon, the bunch of tarragon in, and slap a lid on it, turn the heat off, and let it steep until it's completely cool. Then you strain it off, put it in the fridge, and you've got a jar of tarragon syrup. So
that sounds
good. It's very good for a few things. It's very good in lemonade. So I just juice some fresh lemons and make a lemonade, add some water till you get the balance that you want. Now, at this luncheon, we serve the tarragon lemonade. We put a, here's a new word, I didn't know this word, we put a float of vodka on it. We had organic, so basically we're making a nice cocktail. Mm-hmm, so it's tarragon lemonade with a probably a shot or less of vodka. That was very tasty.
Wow, yes, that's kind of lunch I'd like to be invited to.
That was on the menu.
Very good.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as organic vodka?
Yes, there is. There are actually several brands that make organic vodka because vodka, like many other spirits, is made out of, well, you can make it out of potatoes and things like that, but it's usually made out of grains. So you're just fermenting distilled grains. I mean, you could have organic Everclear made out of organic corn. You know, we can do this.
So this lunch had anything else besides lemonade and vodka, which
would
be fun.
We started off with that, okay. And it was all downhill after.
No. Okay, all right.
Our theme was kind of California. We usually do. Oh, I think last year, or was it the year before, we did Indian foods, mm-hmm. which was really delicious. But this year we decided to use, it was California heritage foods. So we tried to make it very California-centric and with a nod to the immigrants that produce a lot of the agriculture in California. So we made a Mexican enchilada with a green tomatillo sauce. We made Filipino chicken adobo. We did a couple of kinds of stuffed dates. These were the appetizers to go with the vodka lemonade, right? It was very citrusy and light. So the dates, there were two kinds. We stuffed them with a really traditional mixture of bacon crumbles, cream cheese, and chopped fresh tarragon into the medjool dates. The other one, which I loved, was a vegan walnut pesto. So we, you know, toasted the walnuts, ground them in the Cuisinart, or the Hobart, as it were, bigger version of a Cuisinart. And then I think we added dried marjoram, pepper, salt, maybe a little cayenne because it had a little spice to it. And so that was the second stuffing. We also had a second beverage where we took fresh tangerine juice. And I made a syrup. Well, it wasn't a syrup because the tangerines were sweet enough. All I did was take some water and I boiled cardamom, coriander, and black pepper. Wait, I'm wrong. I think it wasn't coriander, just cardamom and black pepper, but really spicy black pepper. And then I strained that off, and then we put that in with the tangerine. So you get this tangerine spice with black pepper and just a little bit of cardamom. And then we mix that with a float of vodka, if you wanted, or even just sparkling water. And so those were the beverages, plus, of course, California wines. We had a lovely donation from Fry Vineyards of a Blanc de Blanc, which is like they did it with a traditional method champenoise. It was delicious. And that, and I know that the Fries had, you know, that fire that went up in Mendocino.
Oh, yes.
Lost a lot of the vineyards up there lost a lot of their processing facilities and the grape harvest because it was right in the harvest time.
Oh, my.
Everything got smoked. So the grapes, even though they didn't burn, the smoke flavor permeated a lot of the wines and had to be thrown out. Oh. So it has been a rough year for California with the fires.
In fact,
we had trouble even getting, we juiced, I think, 8 cases of tangerines for fresh juice. And we had trouble finding the tangerines because of the Southern California fire burned like through Ojai and up in there, which is a big fruit growing region. So it was a year of environmental difficulties out there. But we managed to produce some good food.
Good for you. Good for you. Now, you were at this gathering, and these are the folks, 85,000 of them, who kind of gather and haggle with one another and see what's new. The things that end up at a expo like this will eventually end up on our grocery shelves.
Some of it. There's way too much. We couldn't possibly have all of it.
But you know, things start out and we end up with things. And so what are some food trends, as they say? What are going on out there?
As has been happening over many, many years, this is kind of the boiling pot, basically, where a lot of healthy trends it's come together, and people are more and more aware that, you know, their food is what contributes to their health, and people are becoming a little more selective about what they, you don't buy Cheetos there or Coca-Cola. This is more natural products. And as it has happened over time, the larger companies are seeing that this is where the money is to be made. This is what people are interested in. This is what people want to buy. As I said, these are the companies that are actually showing more profit than, you know, for example, General Mills bought Annie's. General Mills owns for many years Cascadian Farm, which is cereals. They also own Muir Glen, which is, tomato products. But the trends are that more and more innovative smaller companies are also being bought by the larger companies and kind of shepherded through the process. Because if I have an idea about a product that I want to make, like if I wanted to make my tarragon lemonade available commercially, I would have to formulate, and then I would have to figure out how to produce it in larger and larger and larger quantities. So there's this aspect to the business of first you have an idea, and then how do you bring it to market? And then how do you scale it to beyond selling it, for example, at the local farmer's market? Or you want to take the product into the Hy-Vees, which are regional markets, So one thing that the larger companies have is the ability and the finances to support that kind of thing, because you need capital infusions as you scale up, because you're producing not 10 gallons of it, you're producing 100,000 gallons of it, and you have all kinds of things that you need to produce it safely and efficiently and to distribute it and transport it and all of those things that make businesses work. So the larger companies are now bringing that business expertise and investing in, it used to be that the larger companies only bought fairly large, like by the time General Mills bought Cascadian Farm, it was a pretty big company, right? But now they are investing more and more in say, a $10,000 startup. So this is kind of new. This is supporting more and more entrepreneurial. It's kind of, when you go to the natural products show, it's kind of like shooting fish in a barrel. There are so many people there showing their products off. But it costs a bit to show at the store, to show at the show, as it were. So you get a company that's, I don't know, I'm sure you can't make a booth at the show for less than $10,000 or something, to bring the product there, set up the display, have the people man the booth, buy the floor space, advertise for it, da-da-da-da-da. So it is a marketplace for that sort of thing with lots of ideas. And the growing things are functional foods, as they're called, where you buy a tea, for example, that also has antioxidants added or some extra vitamin this or that. So there's a lot of beverages coming along. There are a lot of the newer diet trends, of course, mm-hmm. gluten-free is well established. Lots more vegan products. That is a very growing thing. Now, there has been, although I didn't see it at the show because it's probably not ready for market yet, but there is the clean meat. Mm-hmm. That's the lab-grown meat that's not really meat.
Oh, good name for it. I
clean
like that.
Clean meat, right?
Lab-grown meat, okay.
Right. I suspect by next year we'll see more of that on the floor show there. I did hear from my friends, longtime vegetarians, that they have actually eaten it at restaurants in Los Angeles.
So
it is out and about, yes. So there are a lot of interesting things like that, mind-blowing. You know, it's like aisle after aisle of, oh, try this, oh, eat that, crazy making.
It sounds very large.
It is. It is overwhelming. It goes for 3 days. Usually one day on the floor is about all I can take. It's sensory overload.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's lots of fun.
But again, this stuff will... We don't think we are affected by, well, all this comes to us through advertising and fancy pictures and websites, and we think, oh, well, no, we make our own decisions. Well, no, we don't. When this stuff gets out there.
Well,
no, when this stuff gets out there.
We're persuaded, highly persuaded.
We're persuaded. We are. People do this for a living.
This is a business. It is the food business, which is underpinned by the agricultural business, of which we are very much involved here in Iowa.
Here we are. We grow it. We produce it into things that we eat. Either we do it ourselves or someone does it for us.
That's right.
And we end up ingesting it. There we go. This is KHOI, Community Radio. Community Radio is not like other radio. It's radio that is made by people who we're basically volunteers here. And this station is owned and operated by members of the community, which has a good thing to say about what you hear over this station.
I want to tell everyone for sure that this program is not created by artificial intelligence.
Thank you, Donna.
Well, that is a good... They're talking about now how they're beginning to create local news feeds with artificial intelligence, because the audiences are so small and so niche that apparently they can no longer afford reporters.
Well,
I know. So our show and our radio station is not created by artificial intelligence. We want to make sure everyone understands that.
No, we have our own intelligence. Thank you. Yes. So this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, and this is KHOI 89.1 FM. And if you want to find more about this show, go to the website, khoifm.org. Donna Lana Kitchen has a page on there. We've got archives. We've got recipes. There's a picture of us. And you can find out more about this radio station and a lot of the other fine radio programs, too. Welcome back. That was a series of dance music tunes, contra dance music tunes, starting out with a hornpipe called Miss Gayton's Hornpipe. Why not? Hornpipe. We're celebrating spring here today, and this isn't really a spring thing, but it just so happened to be something on my kitchen counter right now. I brought in some coffee beans. And not coffee beans that I bought.
Local coffee beans.
These are I grew these here in the middle of Iowa. They, oh, Don, I know they don't look like much, but yes, they came from a coffee tree.
Yeah, it's a little like I have several friends that are growing citrus trees. Yeah. Indoor citrus
yes, you
trees,
can do
you know.
That. It is probably not something I'm going to make my fortune at or take to the
No, this is not going to be a product for the Natural Products Show.
No, because
Midwestern coffee beans.
No, I don't think so. Midwestern coffee beans are just something that I grow it because I love plants and it's fun to watch this coffee tree grow. This coffee tree was given to me as just as a small little slip in a pot maybe 5-6 years ago by my friend Rick Exner. He said, "Here's a coffee tree." And I said, "Yeah, sure."
How tall is it now?
Oh, it's about 3 feet tall. This is not its natural habitat. It's not really the most thriving looking plant I've ever had. But last year, it had like 3 or 4 little coffee beans on it. This year, I'd say there's
30 or 40.
30 or 40. So yeah. About 2 weeks ago.
You could almost make a cup of coffee.
A cup of coffee. I picked these about 30 of these little fruits off of the tree. And when I pick them.
Right, you have to know, they are not beans. These are fruits.
These are fruits.
Coffee fruits. And chocolate is similar.
Right. Here's an Iowa connection. Think of it as sort of looks like little plums. There is a very hard bean,
tiny plums.
Hard center.
And the bean is actually the pit,
It's the pit. But around it, there is fruit. When I picked these coffee beans, they were bright yellow. And actually, the fruit is soft. You can eat it. It's not very tasty, but it's a sweet little bit of fruit on the outside. Of course, I had to taste it, but I decided just to leave the rest. And so on the counter over the past 2 weeks, they've sort of desiccated and are turning browner and browner. And when they're more dry, I'm just going to put them in the oven and
do. Here's the thing with coffee production. The coffee fruit, as it were, is usually, in most traditional processes, it's discarded. It's considered junk, garbage, throw it away. It's a disposal problem. So what they have been finding in the last few years as as the food systems begin to explore what's called food waste, how to use these discarded products, is that the fruit from the coffee berry actually has a very high nutritional content of, say, antioxidants. It's fruit, after all. And there's been a movement to begin to take that pulp, which was a discard product, dry it out, and then grind it up, and it has been called coffee flour. Huh? Now, it can be used in confections and other things. We haven't seen it in large quantities in the market yet, but it is something people are doing and beginning to be aware of so that it's no longer a waste product. We're not throwing this out. So don't waste your coffee fruit, Lana.
I won't. I'll do something.
But how are you going to get beans out of the fruit?
I have no idea. Maybe I should Google it or something. I've just been kind of watching them dry out here.
They smell kind of...
Yeah. I want to mention that growing coffee trees is tricky. And because as around the world, we consume about 2.25 billion cups a day around the world coffee.
I would be hard put to go without my morning coffee.
Hold on to your hats, folks, because climate change is really truly affecting these very sensitive little plants.
They are sensitive. Yeah. They are having I know from my trip to Costa Rica last year, which is a coffee and chocolate growing country, that because of climate change, it is getting too warm in the areas where these plants have traditionally been grown, and they are having to move the coffee plantations up to higher elevations. Now, in some places this is possible, but it's not going to be possible everywhere. It's going to be a hardship on this industry.
Yeah, higher temperatures, long droughts, intense rainfall when it comes, and there's more resilient pests and plant diseases because of all this disruption. So
maybe Lon is onto something. We better all run out and get some coffee plants.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine going without coffee and chocolate?
Okay, so 1 year, my one little plant gave me a handful. Well, there's hope yet, folks. But
maybe
Iowa
hoop houses full of
hoop houses, maybe because they do need a lot of loving care. Yes, yes, they do, and they're tricky little things to grow. Oh, but anyway, I just had to bring in kind of a show and tell. We do show and tells here, so that's my coffee bean.
Lon is very very proud of her coffee harvest.
Yeah, big coffee harvest on Onion Creek Farm.
Yes,
yes, it is. Well, we've got some upcoming things happening today.
Oh, yes. Spring is bringing all kinds of activities in towns, just like the birds are waking up, the people are coming out.
Yeah.
We're ready to party.
This is the time of year to think about farmers. And if you are not familiar with community-supported agriculture, think of finding yourself a farmer so you've got something to eat the next year. Because Farm to Folk CSA is holding its Meet the Producers Day today, this afternoon from 4 to 6 at the Methodist Church on Kellogg Avenue.
Downtown
Ames, right across from the post office. But there are lots of other CSAs that want to connect you up with a farmer so the farmer can grow things for you and you can pay the farmer. It works out really well that way.
So that's today at 4 o'clock,
today,
right?
Today, 4 to 6, yes.
Come and meet the farmers.
Meet the farmers. Actually, it's called Meet the Producers Day. And I always think of the Mel Brooks movie, Meet the producers. I think we should all gather and,
Should we wear dark sunglasses?
Yeah,
it
was Springtime for Hitler, the Broadway or the program that was one of their songs on there. They put on this.
Well, Lonnie and I will be there.
Well, yeah, anyway, I'll be there. So that's today from 4 to 6. And coming up this Wednesday, there's a rally for World Water Day put on by an organization called Mighty Earth that is in Des Moines.
Muddy Earth? Or Mighty,
Mighty
Earth?
Mighty Earth.
Right now it's pretty Muddy Earth, too. But
yeah.
Yes.
It's a gathering on the Des Moines River Walk between Locust and Walnut Street, talking about pollution and industrial agriculture.
Yes, rather large issues around here.
There we go. So you can Google Mighty Earth, or here's a phone number, 516-712-9414. More stuff coming up. This Saturday, there's a pruning workshop at the Berry Patch Farm. Think of those apple trees. Pruning workshop, you can contact Dean at berrypatchfarm.com. And that's Saturday from 1 to 4, rain or shine.
It is time for pruning. I'm going to prune my
prune bushes. Prune things. And there's a barn dance this weekend. Go to centraliowabarndance.org, CIBD.org, for more information. Saturday evening, come and kick up your heels. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We'll go out with some Irish jigs. Why not? We just passed by
St. Patrick's Day. Through St. Pat's Day.
We did. Listen to the Donalana Kitchen every Tuesday at noon, repeated 7 p.m. on KHOI. Support this fine community radio station. We are all in this together. My name is Lana Nafiko.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.